Welcome back. President Obama made news this week in a New Yorker magazine interview in which he was quoted that he doesn't see marijuana as being any more dangerous than alcohol. And he expressed some concern that the partial legalization of marijuana in Colorado and in the state of Washington could create a slippery slope situation for other illegal drugs, such as cocaine and meth. With that in mind, we want to bring you the conclusion of my recent conversation with Dr. J. Michael Bostwick, a psychiatrist at the Mayo Clinic. He recently published an extensive study on the health risks and benefits of marijuana. Last week, we focused mostly on the effects of recreational use of marijuana. This week, how it's being employed as a medical therapy. Dr. Bostwick told me he first began studying the health impact of marijuana for a very personal reason.
I'm a psychiatrist. I have a son who's had issues with addiction. I started on this article to try and understand what role marijuana played in all of that.
So what are some of the plants known, or at least potential health benefits?
Well, it really runs the gamut. The challenge here is that the research that needs to be done to clarify that has not really happened. An additional challenge is that at the time that it was put on Schedule 1, essentially outlawed, we did not know that there was the endocannabinoid system, which is a modulatory system throughout the body. We didn't really know about CB1 or CB2 receptors, so we had no model for knowing how it might work. Since then, we now know that the CB1 receptors are differentially distributed in the brain. Those are the ones that are linked to getting high. And CB2 receptors are found really throughout the body, and they're associated with potential modulation of the gastrointestinal tract or of the autoimmune system. There are all kinds of implications because the endocannabinoid system, like the opioid system, is distributed widely throughout the body. So everywhere it goes, there are potential effects from medications or the plant itself at those receptors.
Okay. So historically then, back when marijuana was part of the formulary in the United States, what was it used for?
Well, again, I think it was used for almost anything, but in particular, probably as an antiemetic for vomiting, for various female problems, as parts of poultices that were put together for a variety of conditions. I don't know for sure, but I suspect that physicians would use it based on no particular science, but a long history of it having been helpful for anxiety and for vomiting and for a variety of conditions.
Mm-hmm. So marijuana wasn't always illegal in the United States. Tell us a bit about marijuana's complex history in this country.
Well, in this country, it was actually part of the national formulary for about 100 years, from the mid-19th century to the mid-20th century. And it's a little bit murky about what happened, but there was a perception probably from the 30s on that it was a bad drug and was perhaps linked to bad influences. It was associated with African Americans and immigrant Mexican folks and Central American folks who were using it. Also, which I think is kind of amusing, it was associated with European intellectuals. But in any case, there are films like Reefer Madness that came out in the 30s that sort of were very, very alarmist. And by 1970, there was a sense that the drug had been taken off the formulary 25 years previously, and it was regarded as being an evil drug with no medical benefit possible, despite 5,000 years of history and despite 100 years of being part of the pharmacopoeia of your average general practitioner in this country.
Drugs that are, the prescription drugs that are marijuana-based now, what are they generally prescribed for?
There have been, for almost 30 years, a couple of drugs in the formulary, Marinol and Sesamet. There's also a drug that's being tested that's legal in Canada called Sativex, and these are actually drugs that are based on the marijuana plant, or at least the active ingredients found in that plant. They're prescribed typically in cancer for pain and nausea. They're pills that are taken and absorbed through the gastrointestinal tract, the intestine, and they have a slow onset and a long-lasting effect, 8 to 12 hours. And they're fairly unpredictable because the first thing they do is go through the liver where they're partially metabolized. This is in contrast to the Sativex, which is the Canadian drug that is absorbed through the lining of the mouth, so has a pretty quick onset, or through smoke that, when it's inhaled, has almost immediate effects. So they work very, very differently, and there are issues with things that are burned, of course, and issues with patients figuring out how much they need rather than the doctor telling them explicitly what they're going to get.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with J. Michael Bostwick, About the health risks and benefits of marijuana, Dr. Bostwick is a professor of psychiatry at the Mayo Clinic. So where do you see marijuana being used decades from now?
Well, I think potentially it has broad implications. We already know that it affects appetite. We know that it could affect gut modulation for diseases like irritable bowel. We know that it may have possible relationships to cancer drugs. We know that, in fact, it could have some help in terms of psychiatric conditions. It's a bit like having another option to mix into a variety of other options for treating a whole raft of conditions. Again, if we understand the system that it acts upon in the body better, then we might be better equipped to use it. That's already happening to some extent. For example, in Israel, they're trying to develop strains that have a little, not very much tetrahydrocannabinol relative to cannabidiol, which is believed to be the helpful ingredient, so that we can find out what that does. Again, I'm kind of waffling a little bit, but it seems to me that based on my research that the sky's the limit in some sense.
If it's legalized and studied and put into a form that is predictable?
Well, I think that would be certainly fit a traditional medical model.
Okay.
And I do make the case, which many of my colleagues find highly problematic, that when patients smoke the drug, they're titrating the amount of it that they need for whatever they're using it for. And that's a very different approach than having the doctor write a prescription and you come back and report to them and they adjust the dose. So it's a different paradigm, although we do have PCA pumps used for opiates in the hospital where patients decide within certain limits how much they can use.
So I was assuming that if you could get it into one kind of predictable formulation, but what you're saying is no, actually, you know, the user who is smoking marijuana for relief, let's say of cancer pain and nausea, might better be served being able to smoke it so they can adjust and...
Well, the Sativex idea is a very interesting one where the medication or the active ingredient is absorbed through the lining of the mouth. That's another example that doesn't give you the high peak levels in the blood that lead to some of the highs that people don't want. But I also have another answer to your question. Basically, I wove together an article with more than 100 references from the scientific literature that described all of the potential for this drug. It's all out there in the literature, but we're not going forward with it very quickly because we can't.
And it also seems like there's a lot of emotion tied to this. I mean, there are strong opinions on either end.
Oh, absolutely. And I think politics are meeting science. I mean, one of the things that I don't know if you noticed, but this was dedicated to my son. And ironically, when I asked if I could dedicate it to him, he told me with sort of a laugh, he's now several years into sobriety, the problem wasn't marijuana, it was the other things I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you get what you were hoping for at the end of this article when it came to looking, addressing the issues with your son and trying to gain some understanding?
I think so. And, you know, I think that's probably why my bottom line is that if someone is using this drug for whatever purpose, what we need to figure out is if it's affecting their ability to function. In the case of cancer patients or chronic pain patients who may use it, if they're getting on with their lives, then it's a good thing. I'm also on a study involving adolescents in a pain program who continue to use marijuana and were not getting on with their lives. It's a bad thing. So, you know, I came away with a much more modulated opinion of it and think that it's complex, and I think that it would be helpful to acknowledge it for what it is. I can't help but note the parallels to the concern about prescription opiates right now. No one is saying we should get rid of prescription opiates, but people are very, very concerned about them being used recreationally. Well, in a sense, this is the reverse. The drug is being used recreationally, but it's only available in a limited way for prescription purposes. We have paradigms for trying to understand our way out of this, and one of them is not going to be prohibition.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dr. J. Michael Bostwick is a professor of psychiatry at the Mayo Clinic.